Well, good evening. Just want to get a couple things out there before we get started on our lesson this evening. First of all, I'm happy to be here with everyone tonight. A lot of other places I could be, and this is for sure the best place. I appreciate the nature of our lesson this evening. Brother Gerald reminded us last week that this month we are adhering to the notion of does it matter to God? And Brother Allen kicked that off for us last week when he told us about the life of Achan and some of his shortfalls and his disobedience. And, you know, he brought out the point that, yes, it does matter to God. A couple times I was reminded that Brother Allen, when he was mentioning Achan, sounded like it said Achans, and I was wondering if he was talking directly at me. And it was probably things I needed to hear, so it's all good. I also want everybody to know that this lesson is for me. I may say a lot of we's and you's and us, but I can tell you when I prepared this lesson, it's like I was looking in the mirror. So I appreciate the opportunity to learn from this, and I hope you learned something as well. I know for a lot of you, it's what I'm going to talk about this evening is probably an elevated view, or we're kind of look at things at a higher level. I probably won't get down too far in the weeds. I'm often reminded and humbled when I have an opportunity to speak that my audience, I'm surrounded by the Bereans, so sometimes I wonder, what can I impart to you that might fire you up? But I am going to take some time. I do want to ask questions. I would like your participation if you'd like to do so. I'll try to stop about 3 or 4 times. I'm mindful of my time. The good news is I talked to Brother Allen beforehand, and he said I had about 40 minutes, so I don't think I have to cut too much out here. So the good news is we can go through the whole thing. The bad news is you're stuck with me for a while. So before I get started, I just want to say thanks again to the elders that have asked me to prepare this lesson. So let's move forward. So again, does it matter to God? And tonight we're going to be looking at Cain and Abel. I think there's some pretty good things we can glean from this. I am going to kind of give you a spoiler alert here. Much of our time is going to be dealing with the faith of Abel and the disobedience of Cain. We'll probably spend quite a bit of time in Hebrews chapter 11. I know you're all quite familiar with that. And we'll probably make some other points as well. If we do have time, I've got a couple little deeper questions that people often ask when told this story. And definitely would like participation in that as well. So if you'd like to follow along, we're going to start in Genesis 4. And again, I will remind you, I'm going to read verses 1 through 15. That's where 99% of this lesson takes place. We might touch on some of the later verses in chapter 4, and we might touch a little bit on chapter 6 as well. We'll see how time goes. So, verse 1, chapter 4. Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. Then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Now Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose against Abel his brother and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, where is Abel your brother? And he said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. So now you are cursed from the earth, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you till the ground, it shall no longer yield its strength to you. A fugitive and a vagabond you shall be upon the earth. And Cain said to the Lord, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Surely you have driven me out this day from the face of the ground, I shall be hidden from your face. I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond upon the earth. And it will happen that anyone who finds me will kill me. And the Lord said to him, therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark on Cain, lest anyone finding him should kill him. Why do we worship? Can you imagine someone bringing a gift to God who really does not care all that much about him? You know, it happens quite often. It was certainly the case the very first time worship was mentioned in the Bible. Cain's number one priority was himself. He was not interested in what God wanted, and he did not try to do what God told him to do. So why did he bring an offering to God? I can tell you, I can only think of two reasons why people worship God. A, because they love and admire God, or B, they want something from him. Cain's brother Abel worshiped God because he loved and admired God. God accepted his worship. On the other hand, Cain worshiped God because he wanted something from him. When God didn't give it to him, Cain got angry. I think, how fair is it to God when you or I ignore God's instructions, when we make a mess of our lives, and then in anger blame God because he does not validate or reward our poor choices? Throughout history, the vast majority of people have worshipped God. They've done so for Cain's reason, to get something from him. Even today, a lot of people who consider themselves good Christians are not worshiping God because they love and admire him, but because they want the things that God can give to him. I am sure that we know those who have turned their backs on God. They feel like they weren't getting what they felt they deserved or wanted. You know, all sorts of theories exist as to why God rejected the offering of Cain but accepted Abel's offerings. Some try to picture maybe it was a small amount of grain that Cain was given and Abel gave generously. Yet the answer is made clear in Hebrews 11. It says that Abel offered his sacrifice by faith. And Romans 10 and 17 reminds us, as we walk into the hall of faith, the first hero we approach is an unlikely person that I do not think we would expect to begin with. And Hebrews 11 and 4 records this for us. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and through it, he being dead, still speaks. As we read this account about Cain and Abel, we don't get to know much about Abel. Only one event of Abel's life is recorded, and it's that one event that brings about his death. The writer of Hebrews makes three points we're going to discuss. Ever talk to anyone about this story of Cain and Abel? You know, a lot of times when you're talking to people about this story, the discussion often deteriorates or goes into all the things that Cain did wrong. But that's not what the writer of Hebrews talks about. The writer of Hebrews does not discuss Cain. The writer of Hebrews does not say by lack of faith, Cain killed his brother. Rather than talking about what Cain did wrong, the writer discusses what Abel did right. It's faithful worship. The writer begins about speaking about Abel's act of worship. By faith, Abel offered a better sacrifice than Cain. Abel's worship was accepted by God, and Cain's wasn't. You know, that's a pretty interesting beginning, not only to the heroes of faith that we read about in Hebrews 11, but to creation itself with one of the first judgments by God. You know, I'm reminded we live in a time where the religious world tells us that all that matters is we worship God. It doesn't matter how we worship. It doesn't matter what way we worship God. We do it our own way. The world says we can go to the church of our choice. We are told that it doesn't even matter what religion you pick, as long as you have some sort of spirituality. You know, when I was jotting this down in my lesson, I was reminded after that that's why I appreciate John Morris's lessons the previous month. You know, John did a wonderful job of teaching regarding that we must obey God's direction for our lives. And it's our acts of worship toward him that need to be in accordance with his will, not our own. You know, we're surrounded by religious groups, and they have more in number, perhaps. Maybe they even have a fancy and entertaining service. But at the end of the day, let me ask you, you think God is impressed by a light show? Or do you think he's seeking those who diligently seek him? I bet he's seeking those who rightfully divide the word of truth. And we can be workmen that need not be ashamed, rightfully dividing that truth as mentioned in 2 Timothy chapter 2. I'm reminded of Romans 1 and 16, for I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also the Greek. You know, let me tell you something about Cain here. You know, we got to remember that Cain is not an unbeliever. He's not a heathen. In fact, he spoke with God, and God spoke directly with him. We cannot think that God didn't believe in, or Cain didn't believe in God. He clearly does. So what was the problem for Cain and the commending for Abel? Obviously, we know how we worship God matters. This idea that we can go to any church and worship any way we please is false. You know, if that was true, then wouldn't Cain's offer be accepted by God? Abel knew how we worship matters to God. Therefore, Abel was able to follow what God had prescribed for worship. Cain didn't, and Cain was upset his worship wasn't accepted. And God's response was pretty simple. Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? You know, when I read that, I wondered what kind of reaction would I have? What if God were to come to our worship service and stopped it and said what we were doing was unacceptable? Would we behave like Cain? Would I behave like Cain? Hey, man, I got out of bed this morning, got dressed up, came to this service. What more could you actually want from me? Well, and I think, wow, we would never talk to God that way. But, you know, isn't that the pitfall we fall into and we think we can do things our own way and not in accordance with his will? You know, sometimes people have this idea that as long as they show up, that their worship is good enough. You know, Cain showed up, but it wasn't accepted. How we worship God matters. You know, I know from time to time we're fortunate to have a guest, or maybe we have people that haven't visited with us very often. And, you know, some people have said to me in the past, well, you do things a little bit differently than what I notice. You know, and I'm just reminded. There's a reason we don't have a laser light show or movies and stage dramas. There's a reason we don't have a five-piece band and, you know, a fancy production. And, you know, I can tell you, I've told those people, it's not because we don't have the money. And it's not because we don't like those things. As a matter of fact, Shannon and I, we've been to more concerts than we can probably count. And nothing is more fun than a ripping guitar solo in the middle of it. I love that kind of stuff. But, you know, Abel teaches us something here in the story. True trust in God means that we will worship God his way and not our way. I'm going to tell you a story real quick because I can't help but think of it. And maybe I've made mention of it in the past. It's probably been over a year ago. It was before COVID. Shannon and I decided to take a Sunday and go visit a couple large congregations. And here in Lee Summit. Anyway, I did this because I'd been talking with a gentleman at work, and some of the comments that he'd made to me is, man, you got to come check this out. My pastor's on fire. He's like no speaker you've ever seen. And a friend of mine, his wife, had similar conversations. She was also a member of this congregation. And, you know, I was concerned because here were two people, one I worked with and one who was married to one of my good friends. And they're saying this, talking about their pastor so much and the speaker. And, you know, it sounded like they were putting a lot of faith in this person. And it kind of concerned me, to be quite frank with you. I mean, obviously, our true trust is in the Lord. So I went, and, you know, I'll be frank, I missed my brethren here that week, but I think it was good to experience what went on, because now I can stand with confidence and tell you that, you know, it was quite a production, and I can tell you that they had lights and smoke machines and production that would make most producers in Hollywood envious. And I remember Shannon asking me about three quarters of the way through the service, she's like, what do you think? You know, the exact words out of my mouth was that I was more disappointed than I thought I would be. You know, as we got through the service and I realized that the Lord's table wasn't going to be observed that Sunday, I said, I'm going forward at the end of this and I'm going to talk to the pastor. And this is a man who has about 1,000 members in his congregation. But it didn't matter. It was important to me. So at the end of the service, we went forward. Of course, they kind of had a quasi-invitation. You know, if you felt that you weren't saved, come down, say a prayer. We'll say a prayer with you, like so many in the religious world do. So the kind of the fun thing was, is his name is Phil. Phil saw us coming, approaching him that morning. And of course, you look at me now, and I don't look like the young 20-year-old anymore. And there were several that were ahead of us, and even kind of behind us. And I noticed that Phil was talking with those people, kind of spent his time with those people, saw him catch my eye a couple times, and I leaned over and I told Shannon, I said, this man either thinks that we're visiting from another congregation and we're just coming to say hi, or he knows we have something pretty serious to talk about. I don't know if it was a look on my face. I don't know if it was just anticipation of our conversation that was getting ready to unfold. Luckily for me, when I went up and shook Phil's hand, we had the same haircut. So I told him that I really appreciated his barber, and that broke the ice pretty well for us. So I just asked him. I said, I noticed we didn't partake of the Lord's table, and I was just curious as we why we didn't. And so he went on to tell me, well, you know, my wife actually, where she grew up, they used to do it every Sunday, and he kind of told me a couple other things. And, you know, I mean, this is his house, so he did 80% of the talking. And he was like, well, do you participate every week? And I said, I do, because it's in accordance with God's will. So he asked me why I thought that way. Of course, I explained Acts 20:7 and Acts 2:42. We talked about 1 Corinthians 11. And you know, at the end of that conversation, he turned to me and he said something that I'll just never forget. I'll be frank with it, it hurts my feelings, and there's a lot of work we have to do before us. He turned around and he kind of went like this with his hand, looking at the arena. And he said, well, logistically speaking, it would be difficult to try to do that every week. What? The pastor waved his hand, said, logistically speaking, it would be difficult to serve all those people. So when Shannon and I left, I said, what are you going to say to the Lord when you stand before him on the day of his return? And he asks you, why didn't you? And you're going to tell the Lord it's a matter of logistics? I'm ashamed, my brother. True faith causes action. You believe in it, you trust in it, and it causes you to act. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out into a place which he would afterwards receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he sojourned in a land of promise as in a foreign country. It's recorded in Hebrews 11, verses 8 and 9. I mean, just think of this. If faith was simply believing, then why do we have the account of James in the second chapter, right? Even the devils believed. And I just want to read, when I was preparing this lesson, I thought, how can I sum that up about believing and faith and the definitions? And you know what? The best thing to do, I think, would be to read James chapter 2, verses 19 through 26. If you'd like to turn there or just listen and bear with me, I'd like to read that for you. Verse 19, you believe that there is one God. You do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. But you do not know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead. Was not Abraham was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. And he was called the friend of God. You see that when a man is justified by works, and not by faith only, likewise was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. I've been talking for a little while here in my throat's a little dry. I'm going to pause. If anybody has any questions or comments, I'd love to hear them.
Mike, I really appreciate your work here. It's excellent teaching and a message that we need to hear and make a part of our approach to God is that faith. But one of the things that strikes me is the amount of arrogance that it takes a person to listen to what God says he wants and then decide that there's something better.
I agree totally, Gerald, and I think in a minute you're going to see how much I do agree. You know, giving our best is one aspect that we see Abel doing, is giving his best to the Lord. Abel brought about the firstborn of the flock and of the fat portions, and these were considered the very best by the Lord, and it's the best that Abel offers. God continually demands of his worshipers to offer their very best. Their leftovers were never accepted by God. Our worship to the Lord needs to be the best that we can give. It's not a comparison of one another, but it's that we strive to do our best we can when having an opportunity to share with one another, to encourage one another, and I so appreciate that. You know, I'm often reminded when I'm partaking of the Lord's table on Sunday, you know, that 15-minute exercise, it's not a mental vacation that I get to just sit there. It's a time to reflect upon the Lord and the sacrifice, and it's a time when the Lord demands my very best to be thankful for what he's given to me, the opportunities I have through his Son. And I know we're all grateful for that. You know, there's another statement that the writer of Hebrews says about Abel, that he's declared righteous through his faithful obedience. You know, God accepted Abel's gifts. The writer tells us that we need to look deeper into the life of Abel. Abel was not simply performing a faithful offering. Let me say that again. Abel, he just wasn't performing a faithful offering. If after he'd made that offering and then went and hated his brother Cain, well, then he wouldn't stand as a hero of faith. This faithful worship is generated from faithful living. Otherwise, our worship is just hypocritical. You know, I do notice sometimes, I've heard when talking with people out in the world, sometimes people complain, oh, churches are full of hypocrites. And unfortunately, that charge can be true from time to time. Faithful living and faithful worship can only be generated when we have our lives right. We worship to the Lord, our worship to the Lord will not be found acceptable, and we will not be commended if we don't live a life in keeping with God's will. You know, it's outrageous to think that we can go through our week doing as we please, sinning, being part of the world, but then come here on a Sunday and think that we are offering acceptable worship to God. And again, this is for me. I need to be reminded of this. You know, I think how that worship must turn the stomach of the Lord if these are the kind of life that I would lead. You know, it's hypocritical at best, and it's deception toward God and others. At worst. You know, Jesus teaches us this very principle in the Sermon on the Mount. I'm going to read out of Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 21. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hellfire. So if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift. Leave your gift before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Jesus says we need to think about what we have done in life before we think we can make the proper act of worship to God. If we are aware of our sins and offenses, we need to take care of those things. We cannot think that God accepts our acts of worship of our lives reflect worldliness and wickedness rather than godliness. I'm reminded that faithfulness leaves a legacy as well. You know, the writer of Hebrews, he concludes by making the statement about Abel. Though he died, he still speaks. Do you think Abel knew that his life would be recorded as a legacy of faith? Do you think he knew that thousands of years later, his faithful living would be taught to Christians? How to exercise their faithfulness and worship to God. Abel's faith still speaks as we examine his life. And I'm reminded that the faithfulness of others that go on before us, that also leaves a legacy. You know, I think about this very church congregation right here. You know, this thing wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for the faithfulness of others that have gone on before us. And I think about so many here, the families they come from, the opportunity and the good blessings that they've had, faithful parents and grandparents, even great-grandparents, and what a wonderful legacy that leaves for to be taught by all of you, to see the examples, to see the righteous living. It's an encouragement for all of us. You know, when I was thinking about this, I had some questions I thought I better ask myself, and I'm going to share those with you. But I can assure you that I'm speaking directly in the mirror when I say this. I ask myself, what spiritual legacy am I leaving for my family? Will I be remembered for my faithfulness? Will I be remembered for my dedication to worship? Will you be remembered for your knowledge and devotion to the Word of God? Our spiritual choices greatly impact those who will go on after us. You know, that reminds me, if you look in Genesis chapter 4 at the rest of Cain's life, you see that his legacy was a legacy of wickedness and lawlessness. But you see that Seth and Abel, their legacy is that of faithfulness. More important, when we teach our children, we must be reminded, what are we leaving for them? You know, there's a lot of people that are so concerned about, what will I leave my kids physically? Who cares? What will you leave them spiritually? Will you live a life that's dedicated to God? You know, do your kids see you reading the Bible? Am I sharing the stories of the Bible with my child? Do I show my child that God comes before everything else in this world? And I got to be honest with myself. I need to work on myself. I think about the spiritual legacy of this congregation right now. And I think about, you know, are we doing everything we need to do to faithfully impact those around us? And will we make that impact for other Christians? And I look out here, and I look at this group, and I was thinking about this when I was penning this. You know, I think about the brethren here, and you guys remind me. You're the epitome of Matthew 25. I'm just going to read verse 35 and following. For I was hungry, and you gave to me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer. The righteous is you, brethren. The righteous will answer and say to him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did this to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. That's the kind of legacy that we want to leave for others. I think about when I stand before God, could I be placed into the hall of faith as Abel was? Will my life be considered righteous before the Lord? Or does my life look more like Cain? You know, the context of Hebrews 11 reminds us when faithfulness, it is our faithfulness in times of difficulty when our legacy is solidified. It is when life was difficult that our faithfulness is remembered the most. Faith is that we trust in God to do things His way. Be thou faithful to the end, and thou shalt receive the crown of life. I'm going to pause for a second. I've been talking for a little bit. If anybody has any questions or comments, I'm going to take a drink here.
I think a couple of things. First of all, we've got two brothers who have different, you know, one's a farmer and one's got a herd. I say this, but in general, they don't get along. In general, you got one or the other. Well, what would have to happen is that Cain would have to go to Abel and say, Abel, here's some grain, here's some produce, here's some something. Would you exchange animals that I can sacrifice? Why didn't that happen? I don't think it happened because if you go to the sixth verse of the 11th chapter, now I know we're talking about Enoch, but two things happened. Drawing near to God, you must believe that He exists. Cain believed He exists. But also, that he rewards those who seek him. Cain wasn't seeking him. It's just that simple. Cain decided, I got great grain. I don't know how else to put it. We've got a man that also said, I'm going to tear down some barns. I'm a farmer. I love what the harvest. And I know it's hard for us to see because we're not a community of farmers here. But in general, that's what had to happen. And you make a good point. Cain's heart wasn't in the right place. If it was, he would have made the sacrifice, gone to Abel, made the exchange, sacrificed to God. Things would have been fine. He just decided not to because what he had, he thought, was good enough for God, even though God didn't ask for that. There was a disconnect. He couldn't see it. God did.
Thank you. Alan or Jerry?
Well, you already referenced it. It says, by faith, Abel offered the better sacrifice. And faith cometh by hearing. It's not recorded for us what God asked. Now, it's our tendency to think that God wants a animal sacrifice because of all the animal sacrifices. But there's also a grain offering in the Levitical priesthood. It seems to me that even though it's not recorded, that God told him what he wanted. I don't think God asked us to offer anything that we don't have. I think Cain just didn't offer what God had asked. I don't know that God asked for an animal sacrifice. We're not told. Just because Abel did, because he had, that's what he had. But God doesn't ask us to give something we don't have. But whatever he told him, Cain didn't follow it. He offered less than what God told him or whatever it was. I don't think it was the grain per se, because there was a grain offering in the Levitical priesthood. He just didn't follow what God said. And yes, it does matter what God says.
I agree. I actually do have in my notes here, I did write that we don't have a record of worship, but it's ultimately what we see pleases God is the faithful obedience. So I would agree with that. I do, I'm probably not going to get into it because my time's getting a little bit crunched here, but I did have that as a question. Some of the deeper questions to dive into is, was it a blood sacrifice that God required? Could you say that maybe the first sacrifice, if you thought about Adam and Eve, they clothed themselves with fig leaves, but God clothed them with animal skins. So is there a sacrifice redrawing from there? There's definitely some questions that I have that are a little bit deeper in the text. I sure appreciate the time to sit down with anybody and dive a little deeper in that as well. And those were questions that I had also, so I do appreciate these comments.
Yeah, whenever Mike told me he was going to be doing this, one of the things that I took out of the text, and it's probably kind of repetitive of what's already been said, but it definitely says, Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. So whenever Mike and I were talking, I said, it clearly says that Abel brought the firstborn, so he brought his best. Whereas we don't know if Cain brought his best. It just says he brought an offering of the fruit. So I think it has a matter to do with your heart, too, like if your heart's in it.
Let me just jump in real quick, and if you would allow me a speculation just for a second. It's interesting that there was a conversation between Cain and Abel before they went to the field. I wonder what that was. I wonder what was said. Sometimes when people get rejected or they feel like they've been wronged, what's one of the first things that they do? Try to go find somebody else and see if they can't rally the troops, right? God said, what do you think? Now, we know the result of that. I don't know if it was a result of the conversation or it was just something Cain had already purposed in his heart to do. But It'd be interesting to know what was said and what Cain's goal was in having that conversation with Abel. It may have been to see where Abel was, whether he agreed with God or whether he agreed with Cain, because we do that. We try to find people that agree with us. And to your earlier point, our standard is not what everybody else thinks.
Thank you for those comments. I tell you what, in the essence of time, I'm going to jump exactly in my lesson to what you just talked about, Randy. I wanted to take a few minutes and go back to Genesis 4 and verses 6 and 7, where the Lord is talking to Cain, if you do well and if you do not do well, and you know, sin is crouching at the door and its desire is for you. But we see in Genesis 4 and 8, and Cain told his brother. This is my notes here. This is what I submit to you. I think it's likely that the word told includes the entire conversation God had just had with Cain. And I believe that Cain told Abel the whole story. Because the next thing we are told is that Cain kills Abel. So to kind of to Randy's point, and maybe the lot, right? That he was looking for sympathy or support from Abel. And like sinners often do, perhaps he wanted Abel to say something soothing, you know. Yeah, God can be pretty unreasonable sometimes. Or God is impossible to please. Or, you know, Cain, I thought that was a really nice offering that you offered. And I know you worked really hard for it. And I'm sorry for that he didn't accept your offering. But I would submit to you, I bet you Abel said something more along the line like this. I bet he said something like, God is right, Cain. You have no right to be angry. Or, why can't you just do what God told you to do? What is so hard about that? He probably even told him, you know, Cain, God has given you a second chance. So stop being so stubborn. Isn't it our stubbornness that displeases God when we try to do things our way and not listen and be faithful and obedient to him? You know, 1 John 3 and 12 reminds us that Cain's deeds were evil. It reads, not as Cain, who was of the wicked one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his works were evil and his brother's righteousness. You know, 1 John here, I find it refreshing and clarifying that Cain's problem, it wasn't his upbringing, it wasn't his genetics, it wasn't his environment, it wasn't all the things that people often try to blame their environment for or other excuses. Cain's sacrifice, his altered sacrifice to the Lord, it was rooted in evil caused by disobedience. You know, we can't fool ourselves. We cannot think that while, you know, some people rebel, that our rebellion is not rebellious in the eyes of God. You know, there's no such thing as an unobedient faith. I would also submit to you that there's no such thing as a liberal Christian. And I could tell you about conversations about that with people too. I also find what Jude says in verse 11 is refreshing. Woe to them, for they have gone the way of Cain. And Jude's talking in the day about the false teachers of the day, and he's comparing those to the wickedness of Cain. And, you know, we see the consequences that Cain had. You know, he became a murderer as experimenting with sin. He refused to hear the message, or he refused to hear the truth, so he killed the messenger. You know, Cain, he was a defiant smart mouth. I think it was 4 and 10, where he says to the Lord, am I my brother's keeper? Could you imagine saying that to God? You know, Cain also complained that his punishment was too great. He views himself as a victim. How many people in the world today view themselves as victims? We could go on and on about the comparison between Cain and the world in which we live. And you know, the sad thing is, in spite of such grace, mercy, Cain still knew how to make things right with God. But he suffered because he was foolish, and he refuses to repent. And we see, as discussed later in the chapter, he goes out and marries a woman. He has a family, and he starts a long family line that ignores God. And they eventually just about corrupt everybody they come across. We read that in Genesis 6, the sixth chapter. See that our time has just about expired here. Does anybody have any final questions, comments they would like to make before we move on? Well, I can tell you, brethren, it's been an awesome opportunity. And those comments... Man, I appreciate that. I think it's awesome to get a group of faithful believers together who diligently study the word of truth and to listen to everybody's thoughts. And it just, this is why I'm here. We only want to seek the truth and rightfully divide the truth. And I'm just so grateful for the wonderful examples we have here. You know, at this time, it's our custom that, perhaps not everyone is in the right frame of mind. Maybe you're a child of God and you're struggling with sin. We're reminded in 1 Peter that our adversary, the devil, prowls about like a roaring lion seeking whom he might devour. We saw that Cain got devoured. Or maybe you're here and you're ready to become a child of God. You know, I tried to explain faith one time to somebody. They're like, what is faith? And of course, we can go to Hebrews 11 for the definition of faith. But I told them, faith is action. When you repent, when you confess, when you're baptized, that is part of man's faith response to the grace of God. If there is anything we can do to help anyone here this evening, or you need the prayers of this congregation, I just ask that you come forward as we stand and sing the invitation song.